Here now for argument in the case of KWS versus the people, and we're ready to hear from the petitioner.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the wrong case.
Go ahead, we were just arguing.
Okay, I am at the right place at the right time.
You are.
Thank you.
You are.
Good morning, court.
Well, assuming this is your case.
We'll find out here momentarily. May it please the court, my name is Carol Schrieffer. My bar number is 25174, and I represent the petitioner in this case, the juvenile KWS. The issue that's been certified to this court is whether or not the Court of Appeals erred when it dismissed the petitioner's appeal based upon a finding that a permanent probationary condition of his deferred judgment and sentence was not subject to direct appellate review until such time as that deferred was revoked. To answer that question, as Justice Black did 66 years ago in Korematsu v. U.S., 319 U.S. 432, the answer is yes, the court did err. The court in Korematsu was asked a similar question and decided a question as to whether or not an order that placed a defendant on probation and also suspended a judgment was an appealable order. And the question again, as answered by Justice Black summarily at the end of the very brief opinion, was yes. Question answered. And so today the court has to decide whether or not the case that was heard by the Court of Appeals and summarily dismissed by the Court of Appeals should have actually been heard by the Court of Appeals. In Korematsu, the court acknowledged there that there cannot be a final judgment in a criminal case prior to actual sentencing. But the court there, the Korematsu court, went on to state that certainly when discipline is imposed, a defendant is entitled to review. And the Korematsu case said, yes, probation or provisional sentence is something that entitles a defendant to review. And it was appellate review, not a review by cert or by writ. The Korematsu case looked back to the Berman case, 302 U.S. 211, where the court then held that when a court had imposed a sentence and then suspended the execution of that sentence, again, it was a final order that could be supported on appeal. Now, the Court of Appeal, in its actual opinion, raised the question, is this an order or a final judgment that's subject to review? And clearly the answer, based upon these instructive federal cases, is yes. This is really a case of first impression to this court. Although the Court of Appeals has handled a similar situation several times. In 2003, the Court of Appeals decided the In Ex Rel CBB case, 75 P3rd 1148. That case was almost exactly on point to the case now before this court and in front of the Court of Appeals. There, a juvenile was pled guilty to a deferred adjudication for a sex offense case. And what that juvenile appealed was whether or not he had a right to a discretionary hearing on whether he had to register as a sexual offender. Now, I think the important thing that I noticed in these cases, and not just this one, but in the ones that the Court of Appeals cited, is what did the Court of Appeals do with those cases? They decided them all on the merits. They were not dismissed. So in the CBB case, the Court of Appeals said, and this was, again, interestingly enough, after the deferred had been satisfied, the guilty plea had been withdrawn, that panel of the Court of Appeals accepted the case on appeal, decided the case on its merit, said, yes, this is an appealable case.
Well, now, counsel, you seem to have suggested that you that even Korematsu is only instructive. And, of course, the Court of Appeals decisions are not controlling, and some of them aren't even deciding the issue. They're just sort of proceeding. So I think I'd be a lot more interested in what is the rationale behind these decisions, the instructive decision or anything the Court of Appeals has addressed that should be persuasive to us. What are the policy considerations here, I suppose, that should govern our decision?
I think the policy decisions behind the federal cases is the fact that there was a punishment that was imposed, and more importantly, that punishment was permanent. In fact...
And I'm sorry, I just missed that last word, that punishment was...
Imposed.
So there was, and that punishment was...
And it was permanent.
Permanent, thank you.
Yes, it was permanent. And I think that, Your Honor, is really the key issue here, is because we've argued that there's a deferred judgment, and we're not arguing that it was improper. So we agree with the state that the issue of deferred judgment is not at issue here. It's whether or not this permanent condition is something that can be appealable. And clearly, the Korematsu case and the a case decided actually 30 years later, the Corey case, found that these provisional sentences were punishment that subjected this individual, the defendant. Now, in those cases, they were adults, but similarly, those adults were subjected to judicial review, and so the Supreme Court said, therefore, they're entitled to appellate review.
Now, can I ask you just to sort out for me what this condition is that you're asking for review now? There's the, first of all, is the taking of the DNA, right?
Yes, sir.
There's a sexual offender registration question.
Yes, sir.
And then there is the, let's say, the destruction of the DNA as a permanent record. Now, which of those is at issue, assuming that either the appellate review or the Rule 21 case would proceed?
It would be number one.
Of the DNA?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because there's no need to register for this person?
No, the juvenile did register. And just like in CBB, although CBB didn't get that far, that provision was dismissed, just as the conviction was dismissed and withdrawn. So he's no longer required to register as a sex offender. So
okay.
That's not the issue. The only issue that's here to be heard, if the case hears this on its merits, is whether or not the juvenile had to submit to the genetic marker testing at all. There is no provision right now for the destruction of that. So I would say that the issue is, did he have to submit to that to begin with? And obviously our briefs in the underlying case answered that in the negative. No, he should not have. That's the issue that we're looking at right now, because we did not stipulate, the petitioner, juvenile, did not stipulate to that portion of the sentence. In fact, at the time of sentencing on January 11th, 2007, when we went before Judge Blair and she convened that hearing, she said, we are here today for sentencing. And she heard witnesses. We presented witnesses on the issue of sentencing. And then the petitioner, juvenile, specifically asked that he not be required to submit to the genetic marker testing. And the court denied that. And then in a subsequent 35B motion, we asked the court to reconsider the sentence and reduce the sentence. And without responding to the constitutional issues that had been raised, Judge Blair denied that motion, and hence then the appeal up to the Court of Appeals. Because, Your Honor, it was a final order.
Well, let me make it clear what stage of the game we're in now.
Yes, Your Honor.
So he has not submitted to this genetic marker testing?
He has, Your Honor.
He has?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so is that what you were saying is a permanent punishment?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, can you explain that a little more?
Sure. The statute that required him at the time to submit to that genetic marker testing required any adjudicated delinquent or juvenile that had been found to be delinquent, or one that had agreed to a deferred adjudication, to submit to this genetic marker testing that was to be transferred to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, CBI, where it was to be held permanently. And the conditions for an adjudicated and a deferred adjudication were exactly the same. So just prior to the hearing at which the plea was withdrawn, pursuant to the deferred adjudication, the court did order and the juvenile did submit to a genetic marker test, which is currently on file now. And that's exactly what we had asked the court in accordance with the deferral, the whole idea of a deferment. was to defer that portion of the sentence until he actually had his deferred adjudication revoked, which of course never happened. Now, there was also another stipulation in the sentencing that a juvenile did not, that the people actually didn't agree with. The people wanted the juvenile to submit to therapy with a certified SOMB. That's the Sexual Offense Management Board. And I raised this issue because the Court of Appeals made some, I guess, mention an issue of the fact that the juvenile had agreed and stipulated to this sentence. But in fact, we had not. We had not agreed to the genetic marker testing, and the people did not agree to our request that the child be exempt from therapy with a certified SOMB, which the court actually approved that part of the sentence. So I bring that up again because I think that there are certain flaws in the Court of Appeals reasoning that led it away from its finding that this really should have been an appealable order.
Well, let me just ask you, so the permanent portions of the sentence that are now in place is the genetic marker
issue.
Is that all we're talking about?
That's all, Your Honor.
So is it your basic contention that this is not a true deferred sentence because there was a part of it that could not be erased or not performed?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. Because, and I think it's important to note that the statute under which this juvenile entered the deferred was under the juvenile code, not under the adult criminal code that has been referenced. It's actually under 19, let me find this real quick, because I think that this is important. It's 19-2-709, and the title of that statute is actually deferral of adjudication. It's not like the statute that was relied upon by the Court of Appeals and the people, the criminal statute, which is a deferral of sentence statute. And so there is a sentence, and in fact I distinctly remember when the Court of Appeals asked me the question, so what are we appealing? What sentence are we appealing? And I said, we're appealing the genetic marker testing because it's permanent. And he still has to comply with that. Actually, he had at the time that we had argument last year, and it will remain with him forever. If it pleases the court, I'd like to reserve my remaining time. There are no further questions.
You may.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Deborah Pratt, attorney number 13803. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I'm appearing on behalf of the people of the state of Colorado. The petitioner in this case pled guilty to one count of unlawful sexual contact. Under the terms of his agreement, his case was continued for a year, and he stipulated in writing to a standard condition that he submit to DNA testing. At sentencing, the petitioner asked the court to stay DNA testing because of the statute that was then in effect, which has since been changed. And then, in a motion to reconsider his sentence, the petitioner again challenged the taking of his DNA, but this time, for the first time, challenged it on the basis that it constituted a warrantless search and seizure. When that motion was denied, the petitioner took his case up to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals dismissed this case for lack of jurisdiction because the petitioner's deferred adjudication was not a final order and thus was not appealable. Then this court granted certiorari. The petitioner argues this morning, raises the issue as to whether or not the Court of Appeals erred in dismissing the defendant's claim. Now, the Court of Appeals did properly dismiss the case for lack of jurisdiction because it was a deferred sentence. A deferred sentence on entry of a guilty plea is not a sentence at all. It's really the postponement of a sentence, and it offers the juvenile the opportunity to have his adjudication of guilt expunged as long as he satisfies certain conditions. A sentence is only imposed if the juvenile violates the terms of the agreement, and if he does and it's revoked, then it's an appealable order. But otherwise, a deferred adjudication is not a final order. Therefore, it can't be appealed on direct appeal to the Court of Appeals because their statute gives them only limited jurisdiction over final judgments from lower courts, period. The petitioner actually conceded this issue in his reply brief. Nevertheless, the petitioner is claiming this morning that the stipulation is somehow separate and distinct from the deferred judgment. He says that it constitutes a permanent probationary condition such that that piece of it can be appealed because it still is in effect today.
What's wrong with that argument?
Well, they're intertwined. The condition, the stipulation is a condition of his deferred adjudication. It doesn't exist as an independent entity. It's one and the same thing. The condition makes no sense if it isn't part and parcel of the deferred adjudication.
But as I understand the argument, there is nothing that the defendant could do to get that erased or taken back or not to be entered into the database even though he is perfect on his deferral period, passes his year, there's nothing he can do to rescind that genetic marker. Is that right?
That's true. But
why does that make it a deferred sentence or a deferred adjudication?
It makes it part and parcel of the deferred adjudication. It isn't a separate order. It's not really an order at all. He stipulated that he would do that, and he did it. The only thing the trial court held him to was to his agreement.
Ms. Pratt, yes. Assuming you're analytically correct here, just for the sake of argument, wouldn't you say that that's sort of in the nature of Hobson's choice? So why shouldn't we take it, for instance, on Rule 21? Because it seems like this is permanent punishment.
Well, sir, it's not punishment at all. DNA databases are really enforced not to punish offenders. They're there to protect the public. They're there to allow law enforcement to solve crimes, cold crimes. And
but that seems a little inconsistent with the concept of a deferred adjudication. Which normally, in every other situation, and it's this one as well, is that basically saying the government is giving the defense an opportunity to essentially wipe the slate clean, right?
That's correct, but
so that can't happen in this case.
That's true, but that's because the underlying condition, the defendant did not have to enter into a deferred adjudication, nor did he have to agree to do this. He could have taken this up on a Rule 21 and said, I don't want to agree to this. I think this is a warrantless search and seizure.
Yeah, what you're saying is that the juvenile waived the ability to challenge this as a Fourth Amendment deprivation, right?
I do, Your Honor. I think that he has. I think it acts as a consent to solving this issue. But
Ms. Pratt, I guess I don't understand why that would control the outcome today. And it seems to me that the question before us concerns whether conditions should be appealable, even though it is judgment and sentence or the adjudication is deferred. And I guess it seems to me that the outcome of this case really governs regardless of whether subsequently it's determined to be a stipulation, something he agreed to, and something that was waived or not. And rather, what we're looking at instead is far broader, and that is, can there be appeal from any condition? And it seems to me the concept is that the conditions operate, even though the sentence is deferred, for which the person could get for the offense, but there's all sorts of conditions of deferred adjudications and deferred sentences which may be imposed that operate, that are sort of functionally like sentences. And I thought that was what we're here for. So I'm wondering if you could help me understand if there's a smaller slice here that we're actually looking at than what I was thinking.
I think you're absolutely correct. I think this is the issue in front of the court. I think I sort of veered off to talk about other issues on the merits. But the real issue is whether or not the condition is an appealable order, and it isn't. It isn't even an order. It is a condition that he signed in order to get himself the deferred adjudication and get his adjudication of guilt expunged. But the condition itself is not an order. It's a stipulation. It's an agreement. He agreed to do this. And it's not independent. It's not an independent thing that sits out there that's a contract that he made.
Now, couldn't you make that same argument about a condition of probation? A condition of probation, the defendant doesn't have to accept probation.
Correct.
The defendant agrees to probation and agrees to the conditions.
Correct.
And yet, don't we allow an appeal from conditions of probation?
I don't think so.
People v. Brockover, my first case.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not aware of it. The condition here was part and parcel of the deferred adjudication.
Let me just ask you a factual question. I thought I read somewhere in these briefs that there was a statute passed that removed this condition from the people in his circumstance.
It did,
and then he was sort of in the middle of this, and the judge says, "Well, I'm going by the current statute, not the proposed statute."
She refused to stay it so that he would not come under what was supposed to take place on July 1st. But what really happened was the legislature passed another statute that said, if you're a juvenile and you have a deferred adjudication, then you don't have to give DNA after July 1st. But if you're a sex offender and you're a juvenile and you entered into a deferred adjudication, then you do. So he would have been had to have submitted regardless.
So he's that, okay.
So that's sort of gone because the statute changed again.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, the people respectfully request that the Court of Appeals decision be affirmed and this case be dismissed.
Just to follow up on a few things that the state raised, first of all, this very definitely was a punishment. In fact, it's been said that the state has a legitimate interest in maintaining finality of judgments, as well as in providing for uniformity of punishment. Consequently, the fixing of punishments for offenders based upon the date on which their crimes were committed, or in this case, the date the juvenile was sentenced, is reasonably related to legitimate governmental interests. That's a quote from the people's answer brief in the underlying case. So the state, when it filed its answer brief in the Court of Appeals, acknowledged that there was a final judgment, that there was punishment, and that there was a sentence.
May I interrupt and ask one question?
Sure.
I may not understand the relationship totally here between a deferred sentence for adults and a deferred adjudication, but the language with regard to the juvenile statute seems to suggest even more strongly that the juvenile has not even been adjudicated, much less been sentenced. Is that wrong?
It is wrong in the sense that they have been sentenced, because the deferred adjudication statute specifically permits a court, a juvenile court, to impose terms and conditions of probation. And as Justice Bender pointed out, probation and terms of probations can be appealed.
But do we not have you in saying that, you said a deferred adjudication. So we're talking about, does it pose a logical problem for us in how we would think about or say this, that we have, as you even said it, conditions upon which an adjudication is deferred and is dependent? And the defendant, should he not fail in these conditions and not be revoked, will never be adjudicated. Is that not true?
That's correct, if he does not fail in those conditions. And again, the underlying issue here, though, is, as the people pointed out, as the Court of Appeals pointed out, was there a stipulation to those conditions? And the answer is clearly no. The people did not stipulate that the juvenile be permitted to undergo treatment with a non-certified SOMB therapist. The juvenile did not stipulate to genetic marker testing and made timely objections. The court overruled both objections and entered an order, a separate and distinct order, that the juvenile be required to submit to genetic marker testing. Just before the final hearing, it was determined at probation that the juvenile had not yet submitted a genetic marker because we knew the case was pending in the lower appellate court. And the judge conditioned the final hearing on the fact and on the act that the juvenile go and submit to the DNA testing, which is, again, currently now on file. My time is up. Thank you all so very much.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted.